Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Ford. And today we've got three interviews that touch on all of the things that are going on in the lacrosse world right now. We begin with Dane Smith, a midfielder for PLL's KSLC, which advanced on Tuesday from the elimination round to the PLL Championship Series semifinals, and Smith had a breakout performance as the offense overall had a breakout performance. This interview was recorded after the PLL bubble began, but before play began with Dane. And then after that, we've got interviews with recently selected Under Armour All-Americans Xavier Arline and Brennan O'Neill. Those were recorded at the end of June as we were preparing for this Under Armour All-American process. So stick around for those at the end of the podcast. And if you like what you heard, leave a rating and a review, tell a friend, and we'll be back later in the week with more Inside Lacrosse podcasts.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Dane Smith, a member of the PLL's KSLC, as well as a professional player in the NLL, and a black member of the lacrosse community who in recent months has spoken out and shared his thoughts, experiences, and ideas around the sport and his place in it, recently partnering with Signature Lacrosse on a campaign called I Belong Here. And we're going to talk about all of those things, but first things first, Dane, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So to begin, I feel like it's helpful to provide a little bit of an introduction. So for members of listeners who may not be as familiar with you, given, you know, they don't follow the indoor game as closely or whatever the case may be, how do you describe how you got into lacrosse and your growth into being a professional player?
Yeah, so it's a pretty different story. I started lacrosse when I was 3 years old. My dad played, and my cousin Billy D. Smith played and professionally, so always grew up to watching my cousin play, and always wanted to play for the Bandits, so it was pretty crazy. Played most of my career in Ontario. I played juniors there and then seniors there as well for the most part, and then I got drafted to the Bandits, and it was a weird story. I remember the first time I was in, I went to my first ever at an all game. I was 16 years old, so my first year of junior, and I remember watching, being like, oh, this is really cool, I'd like to play here sometime. And then 2 years later, I ended up getting drafted to the Bandits, so it's pretty cool in that sense. And yeah, that's kind of how my journey started. I had scholarships to the States. I chose not to take them. I had a free full ride to Canadian universities. I took that opportunity instead, and then I entered the NL jersey, draft early. So in 2016, I started my pro field lacrosse career. Got picked up by the Rochester Rattlers. Sudan actually picked me up. He's a big box guy, and I loved it ever since. And I had a great group of guys there. And now I'm playing in the PLL for Chaos. This is my second year, so looking forward to the opportunity.
How do you describe yourself as a player?
Box lacrosse player is a little bit different than my field lacrosse game, but I like to think I'm a pretty smart lacrosse player. I like to see plays before it kind of happens. I also use my speed to my ability. I might not have the softest hands, but I try to use my speed to a lot. And then for field lacrosse, I'm still learning the game. I have a great teammates, great coaching, so it's a little bit different in that aspect where you don't know where the slides are coming from and stuff like that. But it's great to play lacrosse in general, and I'm happy I'm playing at the top level.
So you mentioned that your introduction to the game was through your dad who played and through your uncle who played professionally. So when you started playing yourself when you were young, did you ever have... My assumption is no, but that's why I'm asking the question. I don't want to rely on that assumption. Did you ever have a feeling like maybe I don't belong here, or did you kind of feel immediately accepted when you were young?
Yeah, you know what? As a kid, you don't really see color at all. You're just kind of playing. And I didn't really realize till I got a little bit older that I was the only black kid on the team. Like when I was younger, I didn't really... Again, I didn't see color, so I didn't, that never bothered me. And we were so young that all we cared about was playing lacrosse. And as I got older, I kind of saw that a little bit more and heard it from other people a lot more. So, that's pretty much where I'm at.
Did you play any other sports? Did you like lacrosse the best? Were you just kind of like that immediate lax rat, or was it more of a slow build?
full build. I mean, lacrosse was definitely the sport that I was probably best at, but I did play pretty much every sport you possibly could. My three main sports were football, hockey, and lacrosse. Hockey is obviously a lot harder to make it to the next level, so that kind of ended a little bit earlier than lacrosse. And then football, I ended up breaking my ankle on that, so I kind of figured I'd probably do it again if I were to take that route, so I chose lacrosse.
And so, you know, you mentioned obviously the opportunity to suit up as a member of the Bandits, and that being kind of a lifelong dream and everything along those lines. How do you describe what it feels like to be a pro lacrosse player?
There's no feeling quite like it. And when I say that, I mean, it's pretty cool to play in Buffalo in general. It's an hour and a half from my hometown, so all my friends and family can come watch. And I think Buffalo might be the best sports city going. Whether you win or lose, they're behind you. And we get 16,000 plus fans. It's incredible. I remember my first game. I had the shakes. I couldn't even pick up a ground ball at the time. So it's pretty surreal. And I'm happy where I am.
And obviously the 2020 season, NLL season, was canceled and shortened abruptly due to the COVID-19 pandemic. But you mentioned you made your debut in the Premier Lacrosse League last year and certainly sit on the precipice of getting going with the championship series, like I said, with the Chaos. How do you describe your inaugural season with this team, finding a role, developing as a field lacrosse player, and you know, getting off to a hot start and ultimately a disappointing ending?
Yeah, it was definitely awesome. The first year was incredible. They're definitely doing it right. The PLL's done nothing but great things for the sport of lacrosse. And playing my first year, I was definitely nervous. It was definitely, you have the best lacrosse players. And I see myself not going to university in the States, choosing not to take that route. I felt like I was kind of a step behind, or I just felt uncomfortable for the most part last year. But I kind of found my role a little bit towards the end of the season, and I ended up playing pretty well. But this year, coming into training camp, I felt a lot more confident, and I know I have a much bigger role with the team this year, and I'm looking forward to the challenge ahead, and we're pretty excited about it.
So when you talk about the challenge ahead, certainly it starts with the experience. And so going to the suburbs of Salt Lake City, quarantining, being tested, having an opportunity to practice as part of a three-day training camp with your team and your teammates, and otherwise being quarantined, is where we currently sit as we record this on Friday afternoon. What's that been like? What was the process of, where did you, you know, coming from, were you in Kitchener, for example, and then head across the border?
No,
come to Utah?
No, so I was in Buffalo. I'm roommates with Josh Byrne, who's my teammates for both Chaos and Buffalo. We flew out of Buffalo on Sunday. We ended up getting tested on that Wednesday before we left on the Sunday. Depending on our results, obviously we were negative. So we were able to travel. Once we landed, we came right to the hotel and we had to get tested again. We waited in our room about 24 hours almost to get our results back once they came back negative. The next day, we did our physicals and then we started training camp. It's been a grind for sure. 2 days for the past 3 days, it's been a lot on the body when you can't really prepare for that. So our body's a little bit beat up, but we have the day off today as well, which we had to take another test yesterday to see. And now we have 24 hours to get our results back again. And then I believe tomorrow is our first game. So we're looking forward to that.
How do you describe, with all the changes due to an expansion team and the expansion draft, and then obviously the entry draft, players coming over from Major League Lacrosse, college draft, a couple players getting added to your roster, how do you describe the way that this group is gelling? You know, are there a couple of guys that have stood out or impressed you or surprised you, and maybe you didn't necessarily know who they were, or, you know, other guys that you feel like have taken a step forward?
Yeah, you know what, we have a lot of new guys this year, and to name a few that definitely stand out is Curtis Dixon, Austin Statz, and Slocito. I didn't really know Salcedo before. I remember playing against him last year, and I knew he was quick and stuff. Of actually watching him play in front of you, he's an unbelievable player. And adding Dylan Ward, who might be the best goalie to ever play, he's unbelievable. And having Blaze Rudin as well, so it's a good 1-2 punch there. And I think as our team is primarily box guys, it's easy to kind of gel really quick, and I think for this tournament that's huge.
So one of the elements is you don't really talk about your team without talking about your head coach. He's certainly a character, and you know, one of those guys that pops off the page. What's it like playing for Andy Towers?
Oh, there's nothing like it. Right off the bat last year, he's one of the best coaches I've ever had. He motivates you. He makes you actually want to run through a wall. And he's such a good guy. He knows what he's talking about. You know, he obviously was an unbelievable lacrosse player, but he's a great guy off the field as well. He's never yelled at people. If you see something wrong, he'll talk to you as a person. And that's huge. His communication is like no other. And again, his speeches before games, they get you going.
So, you know, kind of opening up the conversation a little bit, certainly a lot has been made in the last week of the addition of Black Lives Matter jersey patches to PLL uniforms, as well as other types of expression, including cleat messages that players have written on their cleats. What do you think of the way in which your teammates, you yourself, and your opponents, other players in the league, are approaching this championship series as an opportunity to spread a message, spread awareness, and make a stand?
I think it's definitely been good. It's brought us closer together. I know the PLL has done a great job at doing as much as they can to kind of support us. We started a Black Alliance group as well, lacrosse group, with all the Black lacrosse players in the PLL. we're doing the right things. It's going in the right direction. And I'm excited to see kind of where we can go from here. It's a start. There's still a lot of work to be done. But again, I know our teammates support us, and it's been a good start to the PLL series. But again, we still have a lot of work to be done. But again, there's been a lot of conversations with our teammates and with other teams and stuff like that. And it's a good start.
On June 28th, a Buffalo News reporter named Jason Wolf wrote an article about you. Headline: Dane Smith, the NLL's first Black MVP, went unacknowledged. Here's why it matters. And for me, it was very eye-opening for a number of reasons. First and foremost, you know, you were a player that, because of everything that you mentioned, field lacrosse fans might not have known as much about. But secondly, one of the things that was really compelling was, you know, your explanation or understanding of the role that being a Black lacrosse player who won NLL MVP mattered within the context of the league and to you personally. So how do you describe how much it mattered when it was brought to your attention that you were a player who accomplished this historic feat?
Yeah, you know what? it's crazy to think about. When I first heard that, it was kind of obviously recent that I was.
Yeah, it was like years later, right?
MVP. Yeah, it was definitely years later. And I didn't really think about it that way. I just was happy, obviously, to achieve that goal. But the more I thought about it, it's pretty surreal to kind of look back at, not from just myself, but for those kids that look up to me, and the kids that are going through the same things I went through. It's pretty cool to kind of get that message out to say they can do that. They can be the next MVP. And I hope I'm not the last, and I don't think I will be. And it's a good good thing it kind of came out that way.
One of the things that story also kind of shed light on is something that you mentioned in it's, you know, obviously you are Canadian. Buffalo is a border town. Black Lives Matter is a movement that has a role both within the United States and is an American issue, and then obviously globally and is a global issue. as a Canadian, how do you address the differences and similarities between the role that you play as a role model to young Black Canadian lacrosse players versus young Black American lacrosse players, the difference between indoor and outdoor? Like, I wish I could ask this question better. I feel like I'm stumbling a little bit, but the core of the question is, being Canadian, how different is this conversation than if you were American?
Yeah, I don't think there's much difference. You definitely don't hear about it as much, obviously, in Canada than you do in the States. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen by any means. But the same message goes to kind of both. Like, we want everybody to know that kind of they're not alone. And when I first kind of wrote that whole segment on I belong here and stuff like that, it wasn't to kind of obviously get attention to or like change the world by any means. And I'm a quiet person. I don't like to speak up about a lot of things, and especially this is an uncomfortable conversation. But I think that's the biggest thing that the world needs to change, is those uncomfortable conversations are going to are going to be the things that take the next step forward for a lot of people. And I'm trying to use my platform to kind of reach those kids that are the next generation. So maybe they don't have to deal with it as much or at all. I know it's a big thing. So that's important to me. I know I'm not going to hit every follower possible that follows me and stuff like that. But if I can get to a few kids, that's better than nothing.
And so you mentioned the campaign. So as I said, you're a sponsored athlete with Signature Lacrosse, and you partnered to create a campaign called I Belong Here that is designed to benefit the Conscious Kid, which is a nonprofit set up to fight systemic racism via education. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Conscious Kid?
Yeah, definitely. So I can't thank Signature enough to kind of start this campaign and bring it to light, kind of thing. Because again, this whole thing just started with just me posting a little bit, and now it's kind of blown up. And I'm happy I did it. And Signature's had my back throughout everything. And so we started a campaign, and they told me that I could all donations, 100% of donations go to this campaign. And I didn't really know where I wanted to put it at first, and they kind of helped me out. We went back and forth, and we found something that was good for everybody. And I think this is very important to have kids learning about racism and everything like that, because I know when I was a kid, obviously we learned about racism, but we didn't know the full extent. And I think this is an important cause that I think the money's going to go to a great profit, and that's what we need.
And so, you know, obviously it dovetails lastly into just the opportunity to continue to build awareness and raise awareness. And, you know, we talked about the different opportunity the PLL presents over the course of the intervening 2 weeks while the championship series is going on. But obviously, to your point, you know, this is both a longstanding issue and one that unfortunately and likely will extend farther into the future. So as listeners hear you talk so well about the reasons why and the ways in which this matters and is important to you, what's one lasting thing, whether it's like a practical word of advice or piece of direction or just a way to think about this, that you would want somebody to take away from listening to your appearance on this podcast?
I think it's just very important to have that uncomfortable conversation, to listen to others, and to learn, do your research. I know for myself, I'm a Black player, and I still don't know everything, and I'm still trying to learn. So obviously it's very important to do so. And again, have that uncomfortable conversation with everybody, because that's what's going to take to make this world take that next step.
Well, Dane, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. We certainly wish you the best of luck as you continue through the PLL Championship Series and turning the attention to next NLL season as well. We hope that you stay healthy, both from injury as well as the COVID-19, and can't wait to watch you on the field.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
In the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Xavier Arline, an Under Armour All-American selection for the class of 2020 and a two-sport athlete heading to the Naval Academy to play football and lacrosse. Xavier, thank you so much for joining us. And one of the places that I want to start is, how are you handling, how are you coping with the loss of your spring high school season and all of the uncertainty this summer as you begin to focus on what the fall is going to look like?
Well, I really appreciate you having me, you know, talk about this. But yeah, it's been tough, you know, realizing that we're going to have this, this last year, senior year, you know, that's the year that everyone talks about, especially with the amount of talent that this team is going to have, coming back. So it's a little tough. And, you know, even though I can, even though I expected it to be this way, it's definitely not what I wanted or what anyone hoped for. But honestly, my last two high school games in football and lacrosse were, you know, I got a ring from both of them. So I know a lot of people can't say the same thing, but I can kind of hold my head high about how I finished my career, you know, with the guys I've been playing with for a long time. So.
And so from a recruiting standpoint, you had a really interesting situation where we were originally committed to North Carolina and then had the opportunity to consider playing both sports at the next level before just settling on the Naval Academy and all that that entails from a service commitment standpoint and a college experience standpoint. How do you describe the way in which you ended up choosing to be a midshipman?
To be honest with you, I'm a big believer in faith, and I believe that that was my plan all along. It's just, it took a couple of obstacles to figure that out. I think I was attracted to the Naval Academy, honestly, by the football. Pretty decent size football, you know, good competition, and the ability to play quarterback there was huge for me. Once I started to go on the visits to the academy is when I really realized the benefits of the academy. Not just for football, but, you know, life after ball, life after school. And that was when it kind of settled in, like, this is going to be a big sacrifice, but I've been making sacrifices my whole life. And even though this is going to be the biggest one I make, you know, you got to keep, you know, moving forward. And I felt like this was just, you know, the path that God put me on. And I'm just thankful that I was able to make it there.
How have you developed a relationship with Coach Joe Amplo?
He's been awesome. I mean, even the first I saw him right away, he was right in there. I got to spend a little time with him. He told me to go at my own pace. He knows that football is my dream, and it always has been my dream. But he also knows that lacrosse is important for me too. So he said, you know, whenever you're ready, the opportunity is here to come play. Whenever you fit in, whether that's year one, year two, year three, no matter what, the opportunity will always be there, and he'll love to have me. So he's been encouraging. And I've just been really blessed to have him, you know, by my side.
And given all that's going on in the national conversation and certainly a big portion of the focus of the conversation within lacrosse, I'd be remiss not to ask about your thoughts on the issues of racial justice and inclusivity and diversity within the sport of lacrosse. For those that don't know, you're a black lacrosse player who's choosing to, you know, go fight for our country. So your point of view and perspective on this is very interesting to me. So what do you think about all that's going on and how do you want to see lacrosse develop as a sport that's more inclusive of different types of people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very, very important. I think that's when I was younger, you know, I was just, you know, another kid with a stick and equipment. And, you know, as I grew older, I realized the difficulties and the expenses and how different it is for people like me to be playing the sport. You know, all these tournaments too, you see very few of my kind playing. And I never really wondered why, and I never really looked past it. I kind of just said, okay, you know, that it is what it is. But as you get older, as you start to realize, you know, all these things, lacrosse is a very wealthy game. And I think that a lot of places and inner city areas don't have the money to buy the gloves, buy the equipment, and everything like that. I think lacrosse is a great game. I think it combines a lot of different, you know, different sports, whether it's basketball, the mental game, and the strategizing of basketball and the physicality of football. I think it would be a disgrace if this wasn't spread around for everyone. But, you know, I think that it's important that everyone can get an opportunity to play this game and just spread love through it.
Well, Xavier, we really appreciate your time. Congratulations on being selected as an Under Armour All-American. Good luck as you prepare for plebe summer and all that that entails, as well as obviously being a two-sport athlete at the Academy. And we look forward to watching you on the field for the next few years.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Brennan O'Neill, IL's number one ranked recruit in the class of 2020, the last two seasons, and a 2020 selection for the Under Armour All-America squad, in addition to a USA U20 selection as well. Brennan, thank you so much for joining us. How have you managed quarantine over the last 3 months? How much have you been able to train, and how much have you had a stick in your hands?
It's definitely been tough, but I always try to stay positive and look at all the good parts of it. Seeing that I had actually had some time to take off to myself, so that means the next year I play, I'm even more hungry to get on the field. So I've been trying to get the stick in my hand at least 3 times a week, trying to find an open field once that we don't get kicked off of because of the whole virus. But I've been making my way around Long Island, just finding different fields that I can use, and at least 3 times a week, I'm just trying to keep the rust away from me and try not to, lose my stick skills that I worked hard on before the spring season that was supposed to happen. I just, ever since the quarantine started, I didn't put the stick down. So I, even though I took a little break, I mean, after a little break, I got right back at it and been trying to, free weights and a couple gyms open to a few people at a time so I can stay in shape. And that's what I've been up to.
One of the things I'm interested in is you and I have spoken before about the demands that have been put on you in terms of how much lacrosse you've played over the last 3, 4, 5 years. Is there a small silver lining in the fact that you were actually able to like rest and not play so much lacrosse over the last 3 months?
Yeah, that's one of the positive parts of the quarantine that I looked at to keep me going through it. Is it gave me a little rest. You know, there was a lot of pressure, and now that I got 3 to 4 months off, I mean, I'm more hungry than ever to be back on the field, and I was able to stay in very good shape. So all in all, this quarantine did take a lot of pressure off me, as in with all the expectations I had going into the season.
Certainly we can lament the moments that, we missed in terms of an opportunity to watch you play your senior season for St. Anthony's and for the U19 games that were supposed to be this past summer. But I know you and I know your outlook, and I'm sure that you're turning your attention forward. And when you think about what is to come, what's next, what comes to mind, and how excited do you get?
I'm super stoked to be a part of Duke next year for the next season. And I'm just, kind of nervous at the same time, but nerves are good because I think nerves make me play better. And I'm very excited to meet new people and form new bonds with different teammates. And the more and more I think about it, the more I just can't wait. And it feels like it's right around the corner.
For the April issue of Inside Lacrosse, I spoke to your coach, Keith Weiser, and talked about this Durham pipeline that just kind of opened up almost out of nowhere in terms of how long it had been since the last St. Anthony's guy went to Duke. You're going with a handful of teammates. How excited are you to be able to get back out on the field with them?
Yeah, I'm super excited. We're still in touch. I still see them in person too. So we always talk about it together. And one thing is, it's going to help us that much more getting used to the school because you have friends that you already know to do it with. So we can't wait to get back on the field together. That we already have some chemistry from the last 3 years, and we can't wait to develop the chemistry even more.
One of the biggest stories of the offseason was another guy who's going to be a newcomer at Duke, although he's only going to have 1 year of eligibility left, and that's Michael Sowers, who I think when the season was suspended was probably considered to be the front runner for the Tartan. What do you know about his game, and how do you imagine fitting with him?
What I know about his game is that he makes everyone around him much that much better. He finds the opening, he draws the double. So I can't wait to not only get the chance to play with him, practice with him, but to just learn from him, because he's been killing the NCAA for so long that he must have a lot to teach, because over the next year, I really look forward to learning different things about the game from a different player who's been doing really well the last 4 years.
Well, Brennan, we really appreciate your time on the Inside the Cross podcast. Disappointed we won't be able to see you play at Homewood Field under the lights as part of the Under Armour All-America game this summer, but certainly incredibly deserving of the honor, and we congratulate you on behalf of Under Armour and Corgan Sports for the selection, and we look forward to getting an opportunity to see you back on the field.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.